Welcome to Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care Podcast, a show featuring conversations with people living with cancer, caregivers, survivors, loved ones, and the bereaved. Hosted by oncology social workers, Cancer Out Loud takes a closer look at the cancer experience using the power of storytelling. Whether you are a patient, survivor, caregiver, someone that lost a loved one, or someone hoping to find inspiration, Cancer Out Loud is your sanctuary, a place to find hope, understanding, and a sense of community. This podcast is produced by Cancer Care, the leading national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Facing cancer comes with many challenges, but finding the right treatment shouldn't be one. Welcome to Cancer Care's My Trialist, your free online guide to understanding and finding clinical trials tailored to your needs. Developed through conversations with healthcare experts and insights from those who've been there, My Trialist simplifies the complex world of clinical trials. It's a resource designed to empower you with knowledge and options. Here, you can easily navigate through trial options, learn from the experiences of others, and perhaps see a new horizon in your treatment experience. My Trialist is about offering hope and support every step of the way. Discover more about clinical trials that could be right for you or your loved one. Begin your informed search today. Because at My Trialist, we believe in empowering your journey with hope and knowledge. Welcome back to Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care Podcast. My name is Sarah Paul, and I'm the Senior Director of Social Work at Cancer Care. Today, we are joined by Jessica. Jessica, welcome to Cancer Out Loud. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, yes. I'm a 48-year-old Caucasian Jewish married mom of two teenagers. I have a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old. I live in Prince, New Jersey. I am a trained social worker. I work as a clinician at a local nonprofit, and I also work on an acute rehab unit of the local hospital, and I've been there for many years.
And I know that you came to us after being diagnosed with colon cancer. So can you take us back to August of 2022 when you were diagnosed, and really tell us what went through your mind when you got this diagnosis and what were some of your initial thoughts and feelings? Mm-hmm.
Sure. Initially, everyone always wants to know, how did I find out? How did I know? So the way that it happened was my PCP had recommended getting a colonoscopy at 45, which is the new age to get colonoscopies. Then COVID happened. I skipped a year. I'm usually really good about checkups and those kind of things. But due to the virus, I didn't go. At 46, I was getting ready for my next annual checkup, and he mentioned I rarely called him. I said, I noticed I'm going to the bathroom a little more. And he said, you need to get a colonoscopy. I was also due for one because I had skipped the year before. So that's how I landed up getting a colonoscopy. It was just a routine colonoscopy. There were really not a lot of symptoms. Really, I eat well. I exercise. I do all the things you're supposed to do. So I didn't even know what a colon really was. So I went for the colonoscopy. At the colonoscopy, they determined that I had cancer just, you know, as soon as the procedure was done. I was totally shocked. I was not expecting it. There's no family history. There's family history of breast cancer, but not colon, and they're not connected. And I'd been good about going for mammos for that since 30. So I was shocked coming from a background in social work, and I'm a practicing therapist. I also work per diem on an acute rehab unit at a local hospital. And I've done that since my daughter was in kindergarten and she's now a senior in high school. So I've been there a while, but I was just completely shocked. I was in disbelief. I went through the stages of grief, you know, right then and there. And the doctor, when she told me, you know, the first thing she said was, I don't know. People ask if I'm going to die when I find out I have cancer. I don't know if you're going to die. So that was really not something I was thinking about at the time. So it was just total shock and a blur. Everything was a blur. And I have two teenage children. So it also was kind of trying to figure out, when do I tell them? You know, of course, it is hard to hide something like that, but we wanted to go through the MRIs and CTs and all that just to make sure. And that has to happen very quickly after diagnosis. Another issue is that I'm in the field of social work and therapy, but I had taken a break and done something else for a little while. And my insurance, I was diagnosed August 31st, 2022, and my insurance ended August 31st, 2022. So then I had to scramble to figure out, what am I doing in between? You know, thank goodness I had other insurance I could get, but there was that scramble and everything's predicated on insurance. So, you know, I feel for people that are going through issues with even getting the treatment and getting information. It's very hard.
Absolutely. How has your work as being a therapist, how did that influence your approach to treatment and even coping strategies after you were diagnosed?
Yes. So I do per diem on a subacute unit at a local hospital. I'm also a clinical therapist at a large regional nonprofit. So I already had a toolbox of coping skills. So I doubled down on meditations. There was one in particular I found that I really resonated, and I would listen to that before going to appointments. You go through a lot of appointments and you have a lot of phone calls, and there's a lot of waiting as you're going through the process of what the next step is. So almost like you might listen to a song before going out or before a game, like I would listen to meditation before the appointments to almost get me ready, mentally ready for it. You know, I'm familiar with a lot of breathing techniques like box breathing. I would try to integrate that into my daily activity, journaling, worry journaling, mindfulness, all these things that you talk to clients about and you know yourself. You know, I tried to really double down and lean in on those, practicing radical acceptance where you're trying to accept where you are at the moment. I'm a big fan of the isolation journals. So that really, I've been doing that since the pandemic. So that was something I really relied on. I felt more prepared, but also more expectations of myself because of that knowledge.
Can you talk a little bit more about the isolation journals for those that are listening and that don't know about it?
Yes, I would love to. I love the isolation journal so much. So it was created by Suleika Jawad, and she wrote a column in the New York Times called Life Interrupted, which were her journal entries that became an article that won an Emmy. And then during COVID, she created something called the isolation journals, where it was 50 journal entries, one per a day. I would do them with my children who were both probably young teenagers at the time. And then it was so successful, she continued it as a 100-day prompt, which I just continued. And the prompts were super easy, you know, but mindful, like draw a picture of a giraffe with your eyes closed. You know, simple but mindful activities that anyone could do. And also involving writing letters to prisoners. So really very kind of community focused. And then she just continued. So now it's their weekly prompts. And she was diagnosed with leukemia at 22. So I think a lot of that is kind of like stemming from her diagnosis, you know, this invisible disability. She calls it how she travels to meet where the silence is. She's also married to John Batiste. He's often winning awards for his music, and they did the film American Symphony. She may not be someone maybe you've heard of, but she really is inspiring to so many people.
She is. And for those listening, she also wrote a memoir called Between Two Kingdoms that talks about her experience with her diagnosis of leukemia and really the challenges, not only as a young adult with cancer, but someone who is navigating getting a difficult prognosis and really just understanding what it's like to have cancer and what the ripple effect is. So it's also a wonderful story.
I can't believe I forgot that book. Yes, I had that book with me when I was getting my colonoscopy. And it was ironic because it talks about her cancer experience. And then I found out I was diagnosed with it. So really, she's an amazing person.
She is. And I'm just really glad that you were able to find her in these moments where you needed something to anchor you, like journaling prompts or a reminder to be mindful or, you know, a reminder to write with your kids. I think that she created a lot of special moments for you. And I just love that. So we've heard a little bit about your coping. Let's talk about your treatment. So you get diagnosed. What is the first step after diagnosis? What did you have to do?
So after diagnosis, which was on August 31st, 2022, I had to quickly get a CT and MRI to see if the cancer had spread. And that was done at my local hospital. I also was in a position to figure out, how am I going to handle this? Where am I going to go? So I did have a good friend who had also colon cancer and had gone to a specialization hospital in New York City. So I'd reach out to her. She said, get an intake started. I was lucky I had her as a support. So I immediately contacted that hospital, notifying them of my situation. I also, once again, was waiting to hear about the insurance. So that was a little delayed as well. I was able to be paired up with a surgeon who was familiar with the kind of cancer I had. And then the surgery was scheduled for October 6th. So then I was told, you know, about the surgery for those not familiar. And I'm sure every hospital and doctor is different, but with this particular one, it was a 5-night hospitalization. I was told it was a very big surgery. The prep was huge. It was taking pills and Miralax for hours and an early morning surgery. It was pretty terrifying. The surgery was laparoscopic, where they put incisions in you. There were 7 incisions. So the doctor had said it's going to feel like you were stabbed 7 times in your abdomen. And it did feel that way. You realize your core is basically what holds everything together. And post-surgery, I kind of wish someone tells you what you would need afterwards and how painful it is. I couldn't lie down for weeks. I couldn't sit. Kind of was in the reclining position. I have a good friend who's an occupational therapist who showed me how to get in and out of a chair and in and out of a bed. These are things that, even though I worked on an acute rehab unit, you know, I just didn't think about for myself. I'd seen it, but not for myself. And once you're in that position, you do feel so much empathy. I was also lucky in the hospital. I had a roommate who's the same age, the same boat. She was also in for colon cancer surgery. We were big supports for each other. We texted every day, even just seeing, did you make it to your door? Did you make it to the stairs? Like, did you make it to the driveway? And pushing, but also being okay with the bad days.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I think a lot of times when people are going through such a serious surgery, they're not always anticipating what the recovery is going to be like, nor are they told always what the recovery is going to be like. So how long would you say that your recovery at post-surgery took?
So the surgery is very long recovery. Now, I love to exercise, and the doctor had instructed me, do not do any core work for at least 6 months. So for fear that, you know, something could stretch or pull or snag, that was a challenge for me to just kind of scale back. And, you know, I was healthy going into the surgery. I realized you can't prevent getting cancer, but I now realize in hindsight, going in healthier helps you at least recover better. So recovery took a while. I did a little bit each day. I didn't pressure myself too much. I did do chemo afterwards. Chemo has to begin within 6 weeks post-surgery. So after the surgery was done, they staged the cancer. They discovered it was stage 2. The hospital I was at was doing a new blood test to determine if I had circulating tumor DNA. The test came back negative, but traditional protocol at that hospital is to do oral chemo for 6 months for stage 2. So the doctor had brought my case up to a tumor board, and apparently they disagreed about whether to rely on the blood test, which was new, or do the chemo, their traditional chemo for good measure. And ultimately, the pills were decided. So the doctor instructed me to do the pills, and it would give me a 4-5% more chance of the cancer not returning.
And it's one thing to kind of talk about your treatment, the surgery, the chemo, in a very like, you know, this is what I did, this is how it went. But emotionally, having to start oral chemo 6 weeks post-surgery, what was that like emotionally for you?
It was really hard. I was on it for around 6 months. It's a series of around 11 horse pills. They're huge. And you know, as it progresses, it gets worse and worse. So emotionally, I'm someone that doesn't even like to take Tylenol. So the idea of taking these gigantic pills, like 11 a day, and it's kind of 2 weeks on, 1 week off, it was really hard for me to know that this was something I was doing as I was also recovering from surgery. So it was really challenging mentally. What got me through was that it was temporary. I knew the side effects were temporary, but one of the side effects from it is called hand and foot, where you get these dry, red, cracked, itchy, burning feet. The best way to describe it is walking on hot sand. And you have to use 3 thick over-the-counter lotions every day. I'm kind of one of those people that love to walk. Also for mental health, I'm kind of like Forrest Gump. So it kind of changed all that. I could barely hobble around the kitchen. I really had to modify my lifestyle. Also, the surgery, I did lose 10% of my colon. So I really had to do lots of trips to the bathroom. You know, my roommate and I would go back and forth, like, you know, 12 to 15 times a day, you'd be in the bathroom. So you're really not getting out a ton. It really greatly impacted me physically. I had to think twice about social activities, like going out to dinner or walking around a city was impossible. And I really couldn't exercise for a long time just because of that straining, the pulling, the stretching. I moderated. I tried to do yoga, which was not always my thing, but I tried to do other things just to stay active a little bit. And you do feel a lot of anger. You know, I'll admit you feel there's this unfairness, you know, just because when you're someone that lives a healthy lifestyle, you know, you think you're doing all the things you're supposed to do. And you see sometimes maybe people not living a healthy lifestyle, which of course you wouldn't want anyone else to get cancer, but it does feel unfair. There's some anger, but also grateful for being able to get treatment.
And I can imagine, you know, having those conflicting feelings makes it really difficult to cope some days, knowing that you've led mostly a healthy lifestyle, have no family history of colon cancer. You know, there are lots of protective factors in your story. So it does make sense that there were those challenging feelings. And so you mentioned earlier in this conversation, having some coping skills that were already part of your toolbox because you have a background as a therapist. But can you share more about the importance of mental health support during your cancer journey? And then more specifically, how you use those coping skills to address some of the things that you were experiencing?
So when I was discharged from the hospital, they had given me a list of resources. One of the resources was Cancer Care, which was offering therapy for people that had gone through cancer recently. So I had reached out, and thank goodness I was able to get a wonderful therapist who I met with maybe on a monthly basis, and just going over like support and coping skills within that therapy. I joined a support group, which met briefly. I think there's pros and cons to a support group because there are some people that are, you know, you're going to see all different kinds of cancers and all different stages. And it could be a little triggering if you know, you're already anxious about what you're going through and you see someone that has cancer somewhere else in the body and more intense, and you never even occurred to you that you could get cancer there. So I think you do have to be mindful of a support group. Same, I joined a Facebook cancer page. There, once again, these were all resources that the hospital had recommended. And that's helpful too. You know, it's a good resource, good information. Once again, you do have to be mindful because people are going through just so many different things, and there's family members on there and things like that. So, you know, it can be triggering. And you realize, you know, I realized that 46 was not so young. There are people much younger that are going through colon cancer right now. And the surgeon had said they don't know why. They think it's sugar. They think it's microplastics, but no one really knows why there's so many young people. But you do, your eyes get a little more wide knowing so many people are going through this. Some of the coping skills, once again, so it was the therapy. I relied on friends just to meet for like an hour, to walk around the block or to have a cup of coffee. Family, I have a very supportive husband and family members that are doctors, and they were really helpful with guiding me. my hospital roommate. I leaned into small wins like showering that day or humor. I am a Peloton fan. So Cody was one of the ones that just kind of, you know, I would sit on the bike and just watch him for an hour and kind of quote unquote forget that I was going through this treatment. Even things like a ritualistic activity, like a good cup of tea. My sister-in-law, who lives in Portland, sent a tea kit, and just the ritual of making a cup of tea was nice too. So all those areas I really used as coping skills.
Did you find that there were things like feelings or fears or things that came up for you that you weren't expecting?
Yes. I had a lot of fears. There's the fear of the unknown, fear of, will the cancer return? And I think you're in this place where you don't know what's going to happen. And it's unsettling because you think in life you have some control sometimes, but you don't always have that control.
And I think that's such a main theme of being diagnosed with cancer, is just the loss of control and understanding that even the things that you thought you had control of, you don't. A lot of times, you mentioned when you started the oral chemo that one of the biggest side effects was this hand-foot syndrome, which gave you blisters and was really uncomfortable, especially as someone who loved to walk and exercise. Can you talk a little bit about how you managed that and any workarounds that you were able to find for that time?
Yes. So the hand and foot, it gets gradually worse and worse with each cycle. So you figure the beginning, it's okay. And as time progresses within those cycles that you're doing it, the symptoms increase. So at one point, the doctor took me off the medicine. She couldn't even figure out how I was still walking around. My feet looked, so red and inflamed. And towards the end, you know, she would recommend, why don't you sit down to make dinner, or, things that you typically would never think to do, to modify them, learning to sit at your kitchen table and cut your vegetables instead of standing, which most people probably would stand if they can. And I mentioned that I do love to exercise. I am a member of Peloton. For me, and I think everyone, it's good to have a goal. I knew the symptoms were temporary, but just the recovery from the surgery, in addition to the recovery and dealing with hand and foot, I made a goal for myself to gain back my strength. And my ultimate goal was to get to the New York City studio for Peloton to take a class. To me, that's what recovery looked like. So I could do a class and be away from my bathroom and be out in the city and just feel like I really crossed over like a hump.
I love that. And how many live classes have you been able to do? Have you counted?
Too many to count. And I feel like it's a benefit of living one state away, and why not? I feel like my new motto is why not?
I love that. I love that. And for someone like you who really got so much out of and continues to get so much out of something like Peloton and not only the classes, but the community and, kind of the whole perspective around wellness and doing more for your body. I think the fact that one of your goals was to get into a live Peloton class in New York City is great. What an amazing marker of recovery, of wellness, of, getting excited about something new. So that's awesome.
It was my own goal and I did it once and I said, this is so fun. Why shouldn't I do it more? So I did it more.
And to your point, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? And I think this is a good segue into talking about how difficult it can be to be diagnosed with cancer and then also see how it's portrayed, like in the media, in movies, in TV shows. Thinking about that, thinking about these portrayals, did that have any impact on how you viewed your own diagnosis or how you felt about your diagnosis?
Yes, it's so interesting once you go through cancer to see how it's portrayed in the media. It's pretty fascinating. And I realize I really dislike how cancer is portrayed in the media. It's such a character killer plot point. I had not even been aware how often it's portrayed. And also knowing as soon as you see the words, someone will die. I didn't realize that until I went through it. Last summer, I read three books and all three books right in a row. I landed up having to end them because someone got cancer and inevitably I knew that they were going to die. Also, I had to end some shows that I watching some shows I really love, because there was always somehow a character that would land up getting cancer. And then I knew that was a plot point. What they never show is someone getting treatment and healing. I think it's terrible for patients and families to see this repeatedly portrayed as a negative outcome because it feels so hopeless. It also doesn't seem fair since it's not true. Also, since everyone else is probably subconsciously aware of this and they know that's the outcome in the media, they treat you like you have 6 months to live, which can oftentimes feel defeatist or victimized.
And I think, you know, between that and some of the terminology that is commonly tossed around in the cancer community, terms like warrior, battle, fighter, survivor, you know, and again, for those listening, you all know my take on this. You can choose the terms that you want to identify with. I think that's really important. But Jessica, how do you feel about these terms? Like, are there any that like really bothered you or ones that you really resonated with?
Oh, you got me. You got me with this one. I absolutely detest these terms. I think they give misleading ideas about treatment. If someone loses their battle, then did they not fight hard enough or be a good warrior? What does that say to their family members and their kids? Did they win a battle? No, these are dangerous terms that are aggressive in nature. You're treating an illness. Maybe you tried everything you could, but the treatment did not work. Or maybe the resources you had available were not able to reverse the illness. It kind of makes a line between fighter and illness and can be confusing for loved ones or for the ones going through the illness. Also, for the people who do not have the resources or are not able to get proper treatments, it's very misleading, I think. It's hard to reframe since it's such a part of the vocabulary, but I try not to use those terms. I prefer the term cancer thriver, not survivor. I feel you are not your body, you're in your body.
I love that. And again, the message to take away that it's important what resonates with you in terms of a term or definition. You know, if you find some of these terms empowering, I don't want to minimize that. However, there has been a lot of conversation about the negative of these terms. And I really appreciate you sharing that perspective with us, because you're right. You know, we should be uplifting and empowering those that are going through this, not putting our own definitions of what their experience is on them. You know, like we talked about, having the background of being a therapist can be helpful, because you come with some knowledge around coping, around, you know, what are the things to look out for with anxiety, depression. I also wanted to talk about your support. I know we did some talking about mental health support, but what about your support system, family, friends, your community? What was that like?
It seems obvious, but it is so important to have a strong support network. It can be a really terrifying and lonely experience. And just to have someone you can rely on or call or see who cares means a lot. And people do show it in different ways. So, you know, I'm lucky. I have really great, kind friends, a really kind, you know, spouse and family members that were really helpful. And I think people oftentimes, you know, if people show help in different ways, they show support in different ways. There are a lot of moments, I think these self-identifying moments where people really wonder, can this happen to me? I had a lot of friends who were putting off a colonoscopy. You know, the age was 50, it was moved to 45. And I think seeing what happened to me was very terrifying, because you don't, if you don't have symptoms, you don't know. And so, you know, after I was diagnosed, I do think there was a number of friends of mine who did go out and get colonoscopies, because I kind of look like a symbol of good health. Something I think, you know, sometimes when you have cancer, at times you are holding other people's worries. You need to let that go and just take care of yourself. I do think also there's, you know, find healthcare that works for you. But I was lucky; I had confidence in the healthcare that I was getting, in the doctors I was seeing. I felt very confident that they were giving me best practices. I have a great therapist at Cancer Care who really helped guide me. In that sense, I was lucky. And once again, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I live a clean, healthy lifestyle. So I feel like all those things kind of helped in this process of healing.
And I know you mentioned having, you know, supportive friends and family, and earlier on mentioned being the mom of two teenagers. And so can you talk a little bit about what that was like to not only have to tell them about what's going on, but then also you still have to be a mom to two teenagers, you know, so what was that like?
So at the time, my son was 14. And when we had to tell him, after I found out the MRIs, the CT, nothing, it hadn't spread, going in for the surgery between August and October, we did tell the kids maybe 2 weeks later after he found out those scans were done. And my son was pretty shocked, because I'm his mom and I look healthy, and cancer is an invisible disability. So they don't see you as being sick. So I think that was shocking. And my daughter, who was 16 at the time, a 16-year-old girl is sometimes thinking about a 16-year-old girl. But she knew immediately something was up, because there were some things that I was even more forgetful than usual. And, you almost get in this disassociative state where you can't even remember how to get from A to B. And she contacted my husband, her dad, and said, I think there's something wrong with mom. She's even more forgetful than usual. we did tell them, and luckily we had a family member stay with them, which they probably didn't need it, but maybe we thought for emotional support, it would be helpful for them while I was in surgery. But it is hard because you're juggling, the day-to-day of having kids and dealing with their day-to-day activities and needs and errands. And you're also dealing with this total health crisis. So it's a real conflict. It could be a lot to manage the two.
Absolutely. But I do commend you for being open and sharing with your teenagers, because as we know, even if you didn't tell them, they would notice something anyway. And it really, as difficult as it can be, it really does lay that groundwork for open communication. And also, it does help with trust and other things that help the relationship going. So,
yes, we felt it was important to tell them, because I believe that, family secrets are just secrets. And there was no reason to hide this. I mean, it wasn't something to be embarrassed about. We didn't want to put expectations on them, but we wanted them to know what was happening.
So reflecting on your journey now, is there any advice or insight or guidance that you would give to someone who's been recently diagnosed with cancer, and specifically colon cancer, but it can apply to other types, particularly about managing like the emotional and, psychological aspects?
Yes, there are some concrete things you can do to manage the emotional and psychological aspects. Some of them are, do not Google anything. No matter what you hear, do not Google it. I learned this the hard way, but do not check your labs or tests or MRIs or scans or anything else before you meet with the doctor. Nowadays, they're required to send you the results before you meet with the doctor. And if you do not have a medical background, I would highly recommend just wait. Just wait. It can be hard, but wait and talk to the doctor before you look. You won't know what any of it means, and you're just going to make yourself anxious. Use healthy coping skills that work for you. And even if you don't have any, now is the time to dig deep and see what works. I would say to stay present and just try to get through it. If you have questions, which you will, try writing them down for the doctor. And it's okay, they'll expect them. Don't give yourself a lot of pressure to be strong. You'll have bad days and good ones, and they can change 100 times during just one day. It's okay to be vulnerable. You should ask for help if you need help. People who care want to help, but they do not always know how. So know who you ask. And I would say distance yourself from people who will bring you down and make you stressed.
All really good words of wisdom. Google can be a black hole. It is wonderful to have so much information at our fingertips. However, if you've been diagnosed with cancer or really any medical issue, Google is not going to be your friend. It will cause anxiety. It most likely will cause sleeplessness as well. But, and as we come to the end of this episode together, how has this experience changed your perspective on life, or even, healthcare or being a therapist? Is there any changes that you've made personally, or other insights that you've gained that you'd like to share?
Yes, I would say do not under any circumstances tell someone who is undergoing cancer, no matter what kind of cancer it is, that you know someone who died of that same cancer. They 100% do not want to hear that. Keep that information to yourself. It's not going to help them. they're going to walk away very upset and stressed. So I had an experience with my follow-up colonoscopy where I think the nurse was sharing and she didn't mean harm in it. But as I was getting ready to go under for the colonoscopy after being diagnosed the year before, the nurse had said to me that it was great that they caught it because her friend got it at 36 and was dead by 38 from colon cancer. And I was already so anxious, and just hearing this being told to me by a healthcare provider on my way into my follow-up exam was really terrifying. So, and it's something I think people don't think about. I think, you know, you know of someone that had something and you want to share it, and you know, sometimes it's your way of connecting, but it's really so not helpful to the person that's going through cancer. Also, working on a hospital unit, I have more empathy to the fears and the isolation one can feel being hospitalized, along with the physical pain and exhaustion. There's so much physical pain, so much exhaustion. And I see now, more than all the years I've been there, how I really can have empathy for those fears and isolation and just the pain and everything you go through being in a hospital. I think it's a good reminder for everyone in healthcare that these are real people going through something life-altering. One other thing I'd have to say is cancer really is an invisible disability. So you might look okay, but you are not okay. So I think that's also a reminder. Sometimes people, you know, you can't see it. So people will say, oh, you know, you look great, but, you know, inside you may not be. So, you know, it can be confusing for the person, I think, going through it, because then you tell yourself, maybe I'm okay, but I'm not okay.
Absolutely. It can be really invalidating to have people tell you that you look great when you are struggling so much from chemo, or maybe your side effects aren't visible, right? Like, people couldn't see the bottom of your feet when you were really struggling,
right?
People didn't know that. And that goes for so many parts of this. And I think that's really good advice and guidance to give, especially around people that share a loved one's story in an effort to connect. But what they end up doing is not only minimizing your experience, but also putting more fear in you than is necessary. I think it's such an important reminder that every single cancer diagnosis, even if it's the same disease type, is different. Each individual is different, and it will never look the same from person to person. And that's really important.
So I think you have to remember, you don't know what tomorrow will bring. It can be an anxiety-provoking thought, but it's really the truth for everyone. Some things I've learned from this is, I think you should not wait to tell someone how you feel about them if it's positive, and you should do activities that sound fun. A friend and I recently went to see Madonna, super fun, on a Monday night. I may not have thought about that before. Take advantage of life. I think it does change you for better or worse. And sometimes we really are our biggest critic. The experience instantly maybe dropped things about me that I didn't like, and those things now seem trivial. I feel like time is precious now. I don't use every moment wisely, but I feel strongly that I do not want to waste it on, say, maybe energy vampires or people that are not genuine or kind. I realize that about myself now more than ever. I don't think you should have cancer to be kinder to yourself. A quote that I learned through the isolation journals, I'm going to share it with everyone because I think it's such an amazing quote. It's a quote by Susan Sontag. The quote is, "Everyone who is born holds dual citizenship in the kingdom of the well and the kingdom of the sick."
I love that. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for being here with us today and sharing your story, especially as we embark on Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and just remind everyone out there to get screened, to also go to your doctor if you're experiencing any symptoms that you're not sure what's going on. Please empower yourself and seek medical care. But thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care Podcast. Cancer Care is the leading national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services, including resource navigation, cancer-focused counseling, support groups, educational resources, and financial assistance to anyone affected by cancer. You can visit us online at cancercare.org or call our toll-free hope line at 800-813-HOPE. That's 800-813-4673 to speak with a master's prepared oncology social worker.